I'm Jeremy Barron, and I have a cold. Also, you're listening to Colch Narrow Chat, the only weekly English language podcast dedicated to Atletico Madrid and the official podcast of Into the Calderon, SB Nation's home for all things Atletico. My guest on this edition of Colch Narrow Chat is Yahoo Sports La Liga writer Andrew Gaffney. Andrew Gaffney is the guest on this edition of Colch Narrow Chat. Andrew joins me for an analysis, a look back at Atletico's 1-0 win over Valencia on Sunday at a stadium called Wanda, a partidazo, a top three clash, whatever you want to call it. It was punctuated by a moment of genius from Angel Correa around the hour mark. Correa lasering in the game's only goal from 25 yards out, a bullet into the top right corner of the net, the only goal of the game. Put Atletico 9 points clear of Valencia and 9 points back of Barcelona. We'll talk about Valencia's approach, whether it was the right way to go about taking on Simeone's Atletico. A return to the classic intensity inherent in Cholismo. Diego Godin losing some teeth in the process. Antoine Griezmann controversy and lots more. We'll also take your questions from Patreon and from Twitter. So a big thank you to everyone who chimed in, asked us questions. We did get to most of them over the course of our conversation. Before we bring Andrew in and get started with this edition of Colch Narrow Chat, though, a couple housekeeping items. Make sure to leave a rating and review on iTunes if you are a Colch Narrow Chat listener and subscriber. Really helps to get more eyes and ears on the program. And when people search Spanish football or Spanish football podcasts, La Liga podcasts, Atletico Madrid, Colch Narrow Chat will appear toward the front of the queue. So please leave a rating and a review. Finally, head over to patreon.com/ColchNarrowChat if you want to support the show. Picked up a couple new patrons this week. Thanks, guys, including Abdul Malik Alharboa. Abdul Malik is one of our $5 patrons, and as such, he gets a special shout-out on Colch Narrow Chat. If you'd like to have the same thing done for you, you can support the show at patreon.com/ColchNarrowChat. We'll be back with Andrew Gaffney after this. Let's start with the whip around, La Liga whip around. A rainy, a wet weekend in La Liga. 22 match days down, and this was a pretty interesting weekend, not just for the weather conditions, but for some of the results. On Friday, Real Sociedad just pumping Depor 5-0. It spelled the end for Cristobal at Depor, and Clarence Seedorf taking over for him. What did you think of that appointment?
There was a comment from one of the Depor fans that said, I'm not sure what he'll do as a manager, but I think he could do a job in the middle midfield. Probably a state of just how much of a mess Deportivo are. There's some really good attacking talents there, but defensively they're so poor.
Yeah.
And I think any team that's looking for a confidence boost generally looks to see when they play Depor and literally just pounds them into the ground, which disappointing for the fans, but obviously good for teams such as Real Sociedad, who really did need a confidence boost going into that game.
Yeah, and Eusebio looks safe, at least for now. It's something. On Saturday, Eibar, 5-1 winners over Sevilla. 5-1. Eibar scoring some gorgeous goals in this game. It started right on the first minute, too. Eibar have just been in scintillating form. I think they're only lost since November to Atletico.
Yeah, I think Eibar's one of them teams that, to do like a cheap plug in my roundup column, so we need to start removing this idea that they're a small team that are surprising us, because they've been doing it for years now. They're, yep, they're a team that work within a small budget. It's a very small stadium. The revenue is always going to be small, but the players that come in know the deal and they sort of work the socks off, and it's an idea which I think it's a concept to show that football's not always about money and riches, and that these type of players can if they create a bond and they come through the team at the same time, they know what it is. If the big offer comes in from, they're going to move on. But I think it's a nice story always to see Eibar do well. I don't think anyone wishes that. They've become everyone's second favourite team since the moment they got promoted and was friend with being relegated. So to see them doing well and dumping Sevilla, I mean, it's not like they just snuck a victory. It could have been even more.
Yeah,
it's just a testament to the level they're playing at right now.
And they are, that's Europa League placed rival Sevilla. They're just a point back of Sevilla in sixth now. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, Sevilla are a little bit like Valencia in that they've got one eye on the Copa del Rey, which is fair enough, but similar to Valencia's league position, that the idea, the more distractions you have, you can take a little bit of a stumble, and that stumble can turn into a fall, and eventually you're chasing a lot of teams that have caught you back up for these drop points. And Sevilla, as nice as they've been on their eye when they've changed the manager to Vincenzo Montella, there's still question marks about the actual structure of it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Manchester United were looking one, I would have thought, would like to play that level of Sevilla, not the one that we've seen in previous weeks.
Yeah, not the one that bounced Atletico out of the Copa. Yeah,
exactly.
Villarreal, though, and they fell at Real Betis 2-1. Bonera getting sent off for a horror challenge in the first half. Like, this was just absurd how he thought he could get away with this.
I think there's often red cards or yellow cards that you think, well, was that the correct decision? But this was just one that I think anyone who's ever watched football or anyone who's got a working vision would say it's a blatant red card. It's one of the red mist, or I don't know. There's just no justification for that level of violence, and that's what it was on the pitch.
It was terrible.
He was rightly sent off, and it's ended up costing his team in a dear way.
Betis are just 3 points away from Europa League place. That sixth place, that race is really heating up. Celta Vigo also figuring prominently in this race, but they lost 2-1 to Alaves. That's resurgent Alaves under Abelardo. They are now 5 points clear of the drop. They are looking much, much better. Like, Abelardo's not going to win any. He's not a master tactician, but he's made this team better. Like, Munir has been excellent. Ibai Gomez has been excellent since he's taken over.
Yeah, well, I think in the nicest way is one of them classic traditional British type managers who come in and do a job and usually keep a team safe. They're not going to break down the boundaries and push towards maybe Europa League places, but there's definitely an improvement and a structure to that side. And Alfonso Pedraza, who came from Villarreal, who had a short spell alone at Leeds, which maybe was a bit too early in his career. It didn't really go to plan, and we're still seeing the sort of after effects of Leeds struggling to find their place in the Championship as they look to get back to the Premier League. And I think when you look at Guidetti coming in, who was a proven goal scorer, he deserved more of a chance, I think, at Celta. The fact that he wasn't getting game time, and I think it's admirable that he wanted to go out of the club. He didn't want to just stay there and make up the numbers. He wanted to play, and he's given them an extra edge, cup and edge in attack. And yeah, they're reaping the rewards, and while everyone below them are following, they're slowly gaining a bit of momentum, which is important because every point counts in the bottom.
And speaking of teams that lost momentum, how about Real Madrid? They drew 2-2 at Levante on Saturday night. Just what else is new here? We thought that they were kind of on the up and up after thrashing Depor and Valencia last week, and then they go to Levante and they do this, Andrew.
Yeah, it's frustrating, and I think there's no obvious solution there. There's a lot of sort of revisionism when it comes to Zidane and whether it's been found out, and if this is the sort of this true level, and before we were just seeing him riding the wave of positivity of everyone just picking up this high level of form, and in sort of the internal competition which pushed everyone on in the A and B team. And this year he's trying to sort of tinker around with the system, and it's generally been a failure. He's got his big three back up front, but there's still, I don't know, there's still one or two changes. He needs to steal a quote from, who was it, Pochettino, when he was talking about Harry Kane. He needs to have big balls and switch his team up, and if Cristiano's not cutting it, well then put Asensio on. But the idea, for me, the biggest surprise was taking off Gareth Bale. I understand, I know Isco came on and scored. You can say, well, it was a masterstroke because that's what the objective was. But I mean, Toni Kroos was having a nightmare out there. Why not put Isco in midfield? It's not like you're playing world beaters. You should be able to put someone like Isco, who's more offensive-minded, in that midfield three. But keep Gareth Bale on, who's guaranteed, or generally guaranteed, to at least make a difference in the final third. I didn't think Benzema had a bad game. He's always the one who gets singled out. I thought he played quite well.
Always.
But his objective is to score, and unfortunately that's not happening enough. And if Zidane's taken off Ronaldo a bit too late, then left him with no match winner and chasing the game. And you can say, like I say, if it happens once or twice, is bad luck, but when it happens repeatedly over the course of a season, there's something really fundamentally wrong there.
Getafe and Leganés started Sunday with the first South Madrid derby at Getafe, finished goalless as Leganés get ready for the Copa del Rey semifinal at Sevilla. But Espanyol and Barça playing out a 1-1 draw in the Barcelona derby, a very controversial edition of this derby. Andrew, where do you want to start with this one? It was very, just the conditions of PK, Umtiti.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all like to see derbies have a bit of an edge and not become this sort of pally-pally where we're all really good friends. To see this sort of tough tackling and to get a bit nasty, as long as we're within the rules of the game, should I say, instead of breaking them, bending them, it all makes the sort of spectacle for the neutrals a lot better to view. But it's the same old story with the Liga. The accusation of racism has not been made into an official complaint. It seems to have been swept under the rug somewhat, which, by the league's past history, that's what they would prefer anyway.
Yep.
We're in a dangerous territory because there's things, same as the
Iago Aspas
incident with Jefferson Lerma.
Yep.
That, I mean, Lerma, to be fair, came out and he repeatedly said that that's what Aspas had told him. Aspas denied it, and then it's just sort of, I think official complaint was lodged and Levante said they were backing it. But I read a report, I think it was last year, there'd been sort of over 30 incidences of racism or racist language being used, and not a single one had been punished. It's something which still exists in Spain, and the mentality towards it is still quite classic and caveman-like, and it requires an overhaul from the top all the way down to the bottom for a zero tolerance on that. And if anyone is proven of any racist abuse or any racist language, the punishment is severe enough to deter people from thinking it's okay. Will it affect La Liga in terms of commercial gains? Probably not. They've made a huge deal with the Saudi Arabian football to bring
those players over. Yeah.
Total that came to the first and second division teams. Do I see a massive overhaul of racism? Not unless there is an incident of a commercial partner saying, look, these allegations keep cropping up, you need to calm down, and otherwise we're going to reduce our investment. But again, the idea that there's any morality left in football, I think it's difficult to convey. And if one business partner drops out, there's always someone else there that will be willing to take it up and try and expand in another international market. So while I would love to think that there's going to be a change, sweeping changes and a predominant message in matches that it's not acceptable, I think while the incidences appear and fade as quickly as they do appear, then Tavares can quite easily hide behind that, well, there's no official complaint, there's no official investigation, or it's out of my hands and another department's looking at it.
A couple more results before we get to Atleti and Valencia. Girona, 2-0 winners over Athletic. That's Athletic's run ended at 12. Amazing it made it that far. And Girona now up to 8th. They just continue to surprise. They've been great this year. And on Monday, Las Palmas notching a 1-0 win over Malaga thanks to Alan Hellilich in the 90th minute. A big win for Las Palmas, although they are still in the drop zone. Malaga almost certainly doomed at this point. They're 7 points adrift. Sunday night at the Wanda Metropolitano, a top three clash, Andrew. Atletico 1, Valencia 0. About as expected, would you say?
Yeah, I think overall, if you look at the game, and not just based on the stats, which everyone tries to do that didn't watch it, there was an edge to Atletico, which was just a little bit more. They offered a little bit more attack. They were a little bit more stable in defence. And when you look at the two teams in the league, Atletico, again, not to plug my own work, but I do think their season gets completely ignored because their record this year is incredible. And most teams that have a reasonable record would be similar points total to them. I mean, they've lost one game all season. They've got the best defence in the league. The issue has always been scoring, but because they're so good in defence, they don't need to score as many as their rivals. And they're 9 points clear of Valencia now after that victory, and 10 clear of Real Madrid. Oh, yeah, have a game in hand, but you know, that's a phenomenal season from Atletico Madrid, where there's a lot of negativity. Every time there's a disappointing draw, and obviously the cup results this year have been extremely disappointing, especially in the Champions League, that were really, really poor. The Copa del Rey exit was unexpected, because it was the last real chance of winning a trophy, although Europa League has always been kind to them as well.
Europa League,
and I think, yeah, there's an edge to Atletico Madrid above, whereas Barcelona are on a different level to everybody else. Atletico Madrid are on an extra run, and they're also got quite a large gap to the next best teams in the division this year. And I think that they're underrated. I know it sounds strange for a team that's second in one of the biggest leagues in the world, but I think Atletico Madrid's form and sort of the structure which they've regained after a sticky start has seen them sort of shoot up the table, and they did deserve the victory for me.
Here they are with just one loss through 22 weeks and comfortably, not just in second, but comfortably in second. I mean, they're now, as you said, 9 points ahead of Valencia plus the head-to-head advantage. 10 clear of Madrid, although it's 7 if you count the game in hand, but that's still a really good advantage over Real Madrid. And you got to think they are the odds-on favorites to finish second now after this win. Barca are just on another world right now. But if you were going to tell me before the season that Atleti would play half a season under transfer ban, under registration ban, and still be comfortably in second place in February, I would not have believed you. This has just been, it's been a really good job by Simeone, by these players. It hasn't always been pretty, and there's some results that if Atletico had turned these into wins, we're talking about an actual title race. But this was the most intense I think we've seen Atleti in several weeks. They were very much up for this one. This was a real battle, Andrew, just literally blood and gore. Diego Godin, of course, getting some teeth knocked out. You saw one fly through the air.
Yeah, this was a war. Reminded me of Mick Foley coming off the cage of Hell in a Cell, and having the tooth stuck in his nose.
Yeah.
Godin, if there was one player who was going to walk off with, was it? And I think in the end it was three teeth that he lost.
Two or three, yeah.
It was Diego. Diego Godin is absolute monster, and one of those, again, one of the pillars of Simeone's time at Atletico Madrid. Did you think it was a penalty when you saw the incident, or did you just think it was an accidental clash and that it should have?
Yeah, I was gonna ask what you thought of that. It's a tough one. I think it was accidental, but I think Godin was shoved into Neto. Watching it back on replay, I can't remember who did it. Might have been Gabriel. Who kind of shoved him, and then he collided with Neto. I mean, it was unintentional on Neto's part, but I think the argument could be made that it could have been a penalty.
It's one of those classic, cliched ones that if it happens anywhere else on the pitch, it's a foul.
Right.
But in the box, there's sort of like this extra rule, which, unless it's blatant, that you can't be given. My take was that it was the right decision not to give a penalty, but on the same sort of token, that if there was a penalty awarded, you couldn't really have any complaints, because, like you said, there was a slight push in the back of Godin, and Neto's going for the ball. It's unintentional that his elbow sort of crashed into Godin, and I think if he'd got the ball, then there's less of a debate, but the fact that the ball just sort of went through, and not all Neto got was sort of Godin's teeth in his elbow, you leave yourself open to possibly being a foul. It's just unfortunate, but it's one of those grey areas in football which, unfortunately, when it's in the penalty area, it's not a foul, but anywhere else, and there's almost certainly probably a booking as well.
Yeah, I definitely think there's an argument to be made that it should have been a penalty and a yellow card, but as you said, it's a grey area. It's open to interpretation. It's very subjective. I mean, you watched Liverpool and Spurs this weekend, I'm sure, as a Tottenham fan, so you're very familiar with subjectiveness.
There was nothing subjective about those calls. Both were blatant penalties. There was no debate. I don't understand the aftermath of that.
Yeah. But
who needs VAR when you've got referees of that standard?
Right. Who needs it? This interrupts the game.
But it's a completely impartial view, of course.
Yeah, but this was... I think a lot of the frustration with this coming from Atletico Twitter in particular is that Atletico are the only team that hasn't had a penalty awarded this season. They're the only team that hasn't seen an opponent sent off for 22 weeks. And, like, that's fine. Like, you can make the argument of bias like so many fans do. But a lot of it is Atletico just a lot of times don't get into positions to win penalties because Atletico don't score very many goals. And you don't see many attacking runs, like, darting into the box where defenders can trip them up. Part of it's the system.
Yeah, I think there's a danger sometimes of Atletico being too honest, especially in the attacking third. They're a team that mirror image of the manager that if they get pushed or shoved or tripped, they will try and stay on their feet and finish the move. I don't think that there's bias involved, and like I say, it's probably just a lack of action in the opponent's penalty area. Just unfortunate. I mean, I thought again, Gabby was lucky not to be sent off for second booking. I know he just come on as a sub, and that's another grey area in football. Usually when a sub comes on and makes a foul, gets a yellow card, then he makes another foul not long after, the referee will have a little word and say, hey, calm down, that's your last chance. Whereas by the letter of the law, it's two bookable offences and he should be sent off. But I don't want to say that these things even themselves out, because I don't think that's true. I think it's just one of those throwaway lines that rival football fans like to tell you, and they're usually fans of teams which get a lot more favourable decisions than yours do. But they will come eventually, penalties will come. I just think now you've got Diego Costa, who's always a bit of a menace. He don't mind flopping about in the box if he needs to, so them chances and opportunities will come. But Atletico are also a team that don't rely on those decisions. They don't need the officials' help. They're generally quite ruthless and clinical. They might not fashion out 20 chances a game like other teams do, but they'll fashion out two or three and score at least one of them, and that's all they need. They're built on one of the best defences in Europe, definitely the best in Spain, and we've been saying that for the past 3 or 4 years, and I think that's testament to what Diego Simeone's created. Sometimes football has this funny way of people changing their mind based on the last game. Obviously after the Cup exit, which was doubled up after the Champions League failure, fans immediately said, well, this is a reoccurring theme. He's an early man. He gets us to close to these. Yes, he's won the league and we've had two Champions League finals, but in general, it's sort of been almost, but not quite there. Instead of recognising the fact of where they've come from to where they are now, it's testament to Simeone's work, and the players he brings in are usually sort of unpolished diamonds, creates them, makes them superstars, and they generally leave eventually. But there's a sort of common understanding that when a player feels he's outgrown the club, then he can go, and it's reinvested well. They're one of these teams where Monchi gets, or should I say, when he was at Sevilla, got a lot of credit, and rightly so, for his recruitment. But I think Atletico Madrid's recruitment in that the time Simeone has been there has been phenomenal. When you consider the players they've lost and the strikers that have left that club, and they're still incredibly strong with Griezmann and Diego Costa. Obviously Gamero's a little bit off that sort of level, but you know, you've still got two of the best strikers in Europe playing up front for you, and you're challenging. You make them, in my eyes, favourites for the Europa League. As we've mentioned, they've tied up more or less second place. First place is probably off limits unless Lionel Messi gets a serious injury, and maybe Ter Stegen as well, who's also important. Atletico are doing their job to the best of their standards, and I think while a trophy would be nice, I don't think it's necessary to prove that Simeone can still offer something to this team. And the ultimate question would be, who do you replace him with, and do you think it would be an improvement? And that's usually where the arguments of replacing Simeone stop, because there is no obvious name on there. The fact that they've got a 10-point gap over Real Madrid is incredible.
I just go back to games like this on Sunday. Games like this are why I still think Simeone is the right man for this job. I'm not sure there are a lot of other managers that could navigate their way through this kind of battle, through this kind of war, at a stadium called Wanda. This was just an out-and-out fight, and the Atletico got a slim win through an incredible goal from Correa, which we haven't even talked about yet, and they held Valencia to no shots on target. Both games against Valencia this season, they failed to register a shot on target against Jan Oblak.
Yeah, that's amazing. The thing is, even if you get 20 chances of goal against Yiannopoulos, you're probably not going to score. So if you don't even shoot, you're making that job even easier. And I know it's similar to what we spoke about in terms of the Atletico fan base being a bit divided at times. Even the Valencia fan base now, in the short period of time, that sort of boost that Marcelino has given them from, just seems to have forgotten that last year they was close to being relegated, and that there were huge issues for the past two or three seasons of structural changes, both in the dugout and boardroom. And now the fans are disappointed, and there was quite a lot of criticism aimed at Marcelino and the tactics of thinking that he went there just to play for a draw, similar to the Camp Nou game and the Cup of the Rey first leg. What did you think of Valencia's approach? Did you think it made sense to try and be compact and basically match Atletico in terms of defensive steel, or do you think they should have tried to open up a little bit more and test the Atletico defence?
Well, no, Guedes made that decision a little easier for Marcelino, because you take Gonzalo Guedes out of this team and they're just completely different. I think in terms of matching Atletico's approach, Marcelino's always tried to do that against Simeone. That's why these games have always been so tight. They've always been, you know, 0-0, 1-0. There was a stray 1-1 a few years ago. But I think Marcelino did it right. I mean, Valencia didn't play badly. They hung in there for a long time. It took that moment of genius from Correa to decide this game. I mean, Valencia battled. They worked hard. Their pressing in the first half was insanely good, especially from Condoglia, who was just sensational. I think it was the right approach to match Atletico in that sense, and it just they missed that little extra quality. They missed that stroke of genius that perhaps Guedes would have given them.
Yeah, Valencia, a big issue in terms of the creative side. Dani Parejo is one of another much maligned player in the fan base. Last year, a lot of people wanted to sell him. There was quite aggressive, I think, in their criticism, which was unfair. I mean, it's not perfect, and it was being asked to play in a role which wasn't ideal, because there's somebody that occasionally bellies on the ball too often, and that gets punished if you're playing further back. But Gaithers does offer that spark, that something which, again, you can't teach. It's just that special moment that when he gets the ball, you stand up and expect something to happen. And the other problem with Valencia, well, there's two problems, I would say. The strikers, with the exception of Santi Mina, who's got two in his last three in La Liga, are not scoring. Zaza, who was on fire at the start of the year, is not scored in nearly 2 months. His last goal was the 9th of December against Celta Vigo on the 1-2-1.
Yeah,
Rodrigo Moreno.
I think Zaza's still hurt. I think Zaza, I'm not sure if his knee is still bothering, but something's not quite right there with him.
Well, they're trying to manage his knee injury. I think it's similar to Luis Suarez,
yeah,
who obviously at the start of the season was really poor. This conception from people on the outside, that how dare people write off Luis Suarez because he had a poor open start to the season. People didn't write him off. They were just saying that he was poor, and he was poor. Some of his build-up play was still good, but his finishing was off. He couldn't read the line properly, and he was off form. And then you found out that he was carrying a knee injury and playing through pain. He managed to get two friendlies off for Uruguay, and then obviously the winter break in Spain. And since he's at that rest, and that the knee sort of got back to close to 100%, is banging the goals that we all know he will. And Zaza's issue is a little bit different. It's one that does require surgery at some point, but he's trying to sort of play through it. And I think with the switch in the system to be a little bit more defensively sound, and without as many, should we say, for traditional wingers in the team, it gives him less to work off. And it's an issue for him, Rodrigo Moreno as well, who's one of the standout players for Valencia this year, without question. He's only got one goal in his last nine La Liga matches.
Yeah.
Luciano Vieto, who Atletico fans will know very well.
Very well.
Announced himself onto the stage with an incredible hat-trick against Las Palmas in the Copa del Rey, scoring one of the goals of the season in that game. And he's not scored since. There's only Santi Mina, who's got two in his last three, like I said, who's of the attacking sort of quartet that Valencia have got. who's in form. And I think if you're not scoring goals, it's normal that Marcelino's going to try and shore up his defence. And people are forgetting that they played Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid and Barcelona again. It's a horrible run of fixtures, and more so when you're missing one or two key players and your strikers are not scoring. Whereas Jason Murillo is a huge loss in defence because...
Huge.
He was someone that surprised me. I mean, I honestly don't watch a lot of Serie A. I'm not one of these people who claims to watch 50 games a weekend because I find it impossible to do that. I struggle just watching the Liga matches, never mind trying to fill in every other league.
Yeah, yeah.
But they've lost 6 of the last 10 Liga games without him. They only beat Celta, Deportivo and Girona, which, with the greatest respect to them, are not the strongest teams in the Liga. And 6 losses in your last 10 without a key defender is probably why Marcelino's tried to make the defence stronger and frustrating. And I think the concept worked against Barcelona. 1-0 was probably the best they could hope for. Obviously 0-0 would have been ideal, but the reality is when you're coming up against Lionel Messi and Co, they're probably going to get at least one goal, and they managed to hold on to keep it to that. And Atletico Madrid, I felt the criticism was harsh. I was of a similar viewpoint to you. I thought they played really well in the first half. I think the match stuff, like, covered the last parts of it. It was just that cutting edge in attack, which wasn't there. Valencia brought most, were playing for that draw. And Ángel Correa is someone that predicted, I think, for like the last year, is going to break out and it's going to be this superstar. And I think when you know his story and what he's been through, it's incredible his rise to fame. And I think a lot of people don't realise suffering he's gone through from literally an early age.
His brother died this past summer, and he came to Atletico and he did heart surgery.
Yeah, well, I think literally since he's been born, he's been sort of suffering with various family issues. I mean, his dad died when he was 10, and then 2 years later, his oldest brother died, just as he'd signed for San Lorenzo. And football, he admitted, was escape from the sort of the negative parts of life. When he got an agent at that age, which is not completely unusual, but not common either in Argentina. And he said that his first pacer went straight to his mum so they could eat. I think he had 12 brothers when they were all alive. Obviously, like he said, one of his brothers committed suicide last year, which...
Yep.
Is it even more tragedy because he was actually in the city at the time on holiday. He said he had a heart tumour that was detected literally days after he signed for Atletico Madrid. And credit to Atletico Madrid, they did cancel the deal and sort of backed it. He admitted that the doctors actually lied to him because when they were discussing options of an operation, he originally wanted to put off an operation because he wanted to play for San Lorenzo and then a couple of Libertadores.
Yeah, I remember that.
And eventually was advised that it would be best to get it removed as soon as possible. And the doctors told him that he would definitely make a recovery. And they later explained that we said that because we knew if we told you that there was a possibility that you couldn't play football again, that you wouldn't have the operation. And I think that's just a testament to his character. Like I said, growing up on the streets, he plays like with a smile on his face, a little bit. Again, we're not going to compare in terms of ability and what level they could reach, but similar to Ronaldinho in that sense, he enjoys being out there. And I think that goal was phenomenal. It's probably the moment where Atletico Madrid fans who were anticipating Griezmann leaving in the summer are not so concerned anymore because they can push him to play off Diego Costa, bring in Bitolo, who's obviously one of the other new signings. And that team doesn't look that much weaker. It already looks like they've got that ready-made replacement, that special player that in 5 or 6 years is going to be linked with the biggest teams in the world if he continues this trajectory of pushing towards the top, demonstrating and blossoming into one of the best footballers to watch, I think, in Spain. In a generally, and I mean this in the nicest way, one of the ugliest sides to watch at times, is that bit of beauty that sparkles. And the game against Valencia was was a complete proof of that. He's got that talent, he's got that in his locker to make a difference. And it's possible in a new system he could be unleashed a little bit more. And I think further forward is dangerous. He's been fantastic on the right wing, but I could easily see him playing just off the main striker, which will likely be Diego Costa next year. And then you don't necessarily... I mean, Griezmann's always a loss. I think Griezmann, you can't just underplay how good he's been. But I don't think there's that worry anymore. I think Atletico Madrid fans are a little bit tired of him as well. It was no secret that he wanted to leave in the summer. And a fair play to him, he refused to leave when he knew that Atletico couldn't replace him. But I think whenever a player has basically made it known that he would leave, and he did do a lot of things in the summer in terms of videos and sort of secretive messages hinting at a move away, that basically burned most of the bridges between him and the fans. And there was a moment at the end of the game where they got frustrated because they wanted him to attack, and he turned around.
I was just going to bring that up. Just keeps burning the bridges.
It's not the first time.
Yeah, just keeps burning them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose he's probably getting backed up by Simeone to do that.
Yeah, Simeone said after the game that that's what he told Griezmann to do. The coaches support him, the players support him. The fans wanted him to attack because he had the ball. And, like, Griezmann's like, I'm trying to waste time here. Do you not see the scoreline?
I think it was, like, 2-on-2 or 3-on-2.
Yeah, it was, like, a 3-on-1, I think, in, like, stoppage time. And it could have easily started a counterattack that could have led to another chance. But I understand why he held it up. It was probably the right thing to do. But at the same time, he did have the numerical advantage. He could have started a counter. And you just... I don't think you can respond that way. You can't stop play just to curse at your fans, you know? You can't do that. And it's just another instance of Griezmann.
I think
it's
a burning frustration that's there.
Yeah.
It's not something that's new. There's a feeling of a disconnect between the fans and him. And he had a post after season as well. I don't think even he would try and tell you that he did well. He looked distracted. He looked off form. And he's also a guy who's not had a rest. I think a lot of people forget that. We have this demand on footballers to be great every season, and we ignore the fact that a lot of them are playing international competitions every other summer, and then they come back and it's pre-season and they're thrown straight back into the team. It's normal these bodies are going to feel the toll of so much football in such a short period of time. And no, it's not a woe is me about these rich footballers, but you're going to get dips in form. And I think Griezmann, this sort of overwhelming feeling that he will leave in the summer, and it'll probably be for his buyout clause, which suits all parties to the ground.
Griezmann's leaving. I don't quite know where. It might be Barca. I mean, the United links seem to really have cooled. Maybe, but Barca already got Coutinho.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, it's unfortunate in a way for Griezmann, because last summer would have been the perfect time to have moved if circumstances were correct in terms of Atletico's financial restrictions, bringing an end to that possibility. But yeah, the options of where he could go, I mean, you could put him in most teams, but there needs to be a void or an outgoing talent for him to come in that's not going to look like he's putting pressure, or that prospective team's about to sell someone key as well.
One of our patrons asked about him. Vitolo didn't play again this weekend, although with Savage and Godin getting hurt, kind of made some sense. But where do you see Vitolo fitting in the squad? This is from at Sporting Gijon, one of our $5 patrons, very clever username. Why did Atleti twist themselves into a pretzel and try to get him to the Wanda Metropolitano only to have him on the bench? Where do you see him fitting into the squad?
Well, I think eventually it will get into the team. It's just that with Griezmann still being there, it essentially compacts the positions, and there's not really a need to throw him into there. Maybe if they were in more competitions, there'd be a possibility they would get a few minutes here and there. Injuries dictate the lack of opportunity at the weekend, but I think it's an option. I don't think Simeone is somebody that ever rushes a player into the team. It's someone who's very patient. You don't think, oh, this guy costs X amount of million, he has to play. Simeone bases it on what they do on the training ground. And remember, when Vieto joined, he didn't throw him into the team because he was struggling with the intensity of the training sessions. And I don't think that's the issue with Bitola. It's just the team in front of him and the first 11, which is generally playing every single week when they're available. He doesn't fit into that best 11 at the moment. Carrasco's had a bit of an upturn in form after a bit of a lull for his own ability that he possesses, but I think that's, again, not in a disrespectful way, but the reason why he's at an Atletico Madrid and not a Barcelona is because he does suffer from those drops in form. But he's picked up the pace. Simeone likes to compact the midfield a bit more as opposed to going all out on a risk, and with Angel Correa playing really well on the right hand side, you wouldn't want to drop him for Bitola. And Simeone has a great respect for Griezmann. We all know that he loves Diego Costa as well. So I think until the summer, he's probably going to have to be content with this sort of semi-rotational role. And we'll see. Once the comings and goings are all done, he'll eventually be pushed into that first 11 and given a chance. It was a difficult situation for Bitola. I mean, there was the protracted move, which a lot of people questioned whether it was legal or not. Technically, they didn't break any rules, but it was a little bit sort of another grey area of football, which wasn't exactly right, but technically not wrong either. Didn't have the best of time at Las Palmas, but Las Palmas, as we all know, are constantly in a period of unrest and change. He then arrived and he wasn't fully fit. He picked up an injury just before he left Las Palmas, and I think that's also made an issue. He's probably just a little bit behind the players that are currently in the first 11, but I don't think Simeone's short-termism is that he's not going to play. He will play. It's just he needs patience, and his time will come.
I think he's going to be starting by the end of the season. I do think his knee injury and the culpa had something to do with it. Considering his injury history, which consists of an ACL tear, consists of various other bumps and bruises, I think they do want to be careful with him and kind of bedding him in. And just Correa right now, just Simeone wants to just insist with him and keep him. We'll see. I do think he will be starting week in, week out by the end of the season. I understand the frustration, though, that you spent nearly $40 million to sign him and rip him away from Sevilla. Now he's here, and he's not getting a lot of time. I get the frustration. I really do. Yeah, I do.
I think the idea, if Simeone doesn't rate somebody, they're definitely not on the bench. Simeone's very cutthroat with people that is either being given or have been chosen. I don't think he's hands-on, really, in the transfer market. I think he leaves that a lot to the director of football. But if there's a player he doesn't enjoy or he doesn't think you're going to fit into his team, it's not someone who hides it. Leave them out of the squad or won't even put them on the bench. We've seen like Gaetan's had lots of opportunities, but it's clearly not going to, his long-term future is not at Atletico Madrid. We've seen Jota, who's at Wolves and having a fantastic season by all accounts. I mean, I've admittedly not watched the Championship that much from Spain. I don't think it's even on TV in Spain. But from the reports of people that have watched him play, they say he's been fantastic. But I think that deal's already been agreed to make it permanent in the summer. But Diego Simeone was someone that obviously saw he was talented, but he wasn't somebody that sort of fit into his methodology, his system. And Bitola was someone that he obviously values. Like you say, he's come back from an injury which can have relapses, which would be disastrous, and it's just patience. It's not a question of a waste of money. They'll definitely be used at some point, and maybe if they go further in the Europa League with the games coming thick and fast, there'll be more rotation chances for him to get regular 90 minutes under his belt and prove why he should be starting.
We'll leave it there for now, Andrew. This has been awesome. Thanks so much for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and it's always a pleasure.
You can follow Andrew on Twitter at GaffneyVLC. You can follow me, your host, Jeremy Barron, on Twitter at JBBarron, JBBERREN. Follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon. Like ITC on Facebook at facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. You can subscribe and listen to Colt Gennaro Chat on your favorite podcasting platform. That includes iTunes. If you're on iTunes, make sure to leave a rating and a review. It really helps get more eyes and ears on the program. And also, if you want to become a patron, you can do that at patreon.com/ColtGennaroChat. You'll get a lot of cool goodies, a lot of cool benefits, including access to our weekly roundup pods. Of course, we're not doing one this week, but next week, Rob Walker will have you covered. You'll get behind-the-scenes access to the show, how it's made, exclusive polls, and a lot more now and in the future. So patreon.com/ColtGennaroChat is the place to be. Until next time, adios.